Hello and welcome to Network Europe. I'm Richard Walker, and for the next half an hour, we'll be exploring the Valentine theme of love in all its senses. Not in a predictable way, though, in a uniquely and sometimes oddly European way.
I will hug you for free, but other people have to pay. And the minimum fee is 20 krona.
That's a campaign to hug strangers in Stockholm. Then we take the Spanish bus ride in search of everlasting happiness.
I had a wonderful time, a marvelous time. And there were actually too few men, so some women had to miss out. There were two men I liked, but they fancied other women. But no problem, that's the way it goes.
In Sweden, you can get a divorce in 3 days. In Malta, it's illegal. We go to Brussels, where our leaders are trying to clear up the law. It's about as easy as deciding who gets to keep the dog. And for romance in high places, we go to Paris for President Sarkozy's wedding. But given that the blushing bride says monogamy's boring, is this a car crash waiting to happen? All of that and a reminder of this month's quiz coming up on this edition of Network Europe, a partnership of Europe's leading broadcasters, this month coming to you from Hilversum in Holland. The Dutch daily newspaper De Telegraaf has conducted a major survey on the subject of relationships in the run-up to Valentine's Day. The results suggest we're all in trouble. 1 in 5 think their partner would have an affair if given the chance, and half think their relationships got worse since it started. Does this mean the conventional approach to love, relationships, marriage and affection are outdated? Not if you're the President of France. You'd be hard-pressed not to have heard that French President Nicolas Sarkozy married Carla Bruni last weekend in a small civil ceremony at the Élysée Palace. The two met 3 months ago and their whirlwind romance has captured attention right around the world. Miss Bruni was one of the highest paid fashion models in the 1990s. She then turned to pop music and released her debut album in 2002. She's also the heiress to the fortune of an Italian tire company. And she's famously made a habit of bedding the famous. Radio France International's Sarah Elsass told me a short while ago coverage of the event was reaching saturation.
I mean, there was a lot of media attention over the weekend and definitely leading up to it. It was a very anticipated event. Will he get married? Won't he get married? Where will he get married? It sort of died down at this point, but it definitely was a very hyped up event before. And what's interesting is Sarkozy even played into it. Earlier this month, he told journalists that they wouldn't know about it until after the fact.
Il y a de fortes chances que vous l'appreniez quand ça sera déjà fait.
There's a good chance you'll learn about it once it's done, he says there. Well, he was right. The wedding wasn't confirmed until the afternoon, a few hours after it took place.
The tabloids have been quite obsessed with this whole relationship, and I'm sure it's selling copies. Did the wedding live up to the hype at all?
Well, actually, no. It was a very small civil ceremony. Only about 20 people were there, presided over by the local mayor of the 8th arrondissement, where the Élysée Palace is, the presidential palace. So that mayor, François Lebel, in interviews afterwards, was quite impressed. He was talking about Carla Bruni and her white dress looking beautiful as usual. You can hear him here in a telephone interview afterwards.
This is an extraordinary thing for me as the mayor of the 8th arrondissement, but also because it's the first time a president gets married while in office.
What he says there, that's not completely true. Sarkozy is actually the second president to be married while in office. Gaston Doumergue was single when he was elected in 1924, and he got married just a few days before he left office in 1931.
Right, so tell us about France's new first lady then, Sarah. We seem to really only hear about her in terms of how many men she's been with. And she is portrayed as something of a man-eater, you know, but Mick Jagger always comes up, the philosopher who she had a son with and also had the affair with the father of. I mean, the list goes on. I wonder if it's fair to talk about her in these ways.
Well, I mean, on some level, it's true. Often a woman who has many partners is seen, can't really get away with it as much as a man can. But I would say that in this case, Carla Bruni is probably feeding the fire. Last February, in a magazine interview, she said that she was, quote, bored by monogamy and that she's monogamous from time to time, but that she prefers polygamy and polyandry. So she's not exactly keeping a low profile either.
I don't want to turn this into gossip radio, but can we assume then that the president and the new first lady might be having an open relationship?
That's really hard to tell. I mean, I suppose that if you look at historically, French presidents seem to have had their relationships on the side, one of those everyone knows but no one talks about it. So it's possibly now that it'll just be business as usual. Who knows? But I think now that Carla Bruni is the first lady, it'll definitely make Sarkozy's state visits to other countries a little easier. When he tried to go to Saudi Arabia, for example, there was questions over whether or not they could stay in the same room because that country does not allow unmarried couples to stay together. So that definitely clears it up now that she is Mrs. Sarkozy. It makes it easier, I think, for him to present himself at least with a public face.
Yes, absolutely. But will it make things easier with the media for Mr. Sarkozy, though? Because with such a celebrity face on his arm all the time, I imagine the attention will never stop.
I don't think he would really mind. Honestly, it seems like this is a president who likes to play the media and who likes to be in the spotlight. I mean, you even see he publicly showed his relationship for the first time in December at Euro Disney, you know, with all the media around. So it's true that definitely the media is taking liberties. You see a lot more photos. They're definitely going to be photogenic photos, and it may spell the end of possibly France's keeping out of public figures' private life, but I'm not sure that the French president necessarily minds that.
Network Europe's Sarah Elsass on the line from Paris there.
Are you lost in La Mancha? Parts of old rural Spain are like ghost towns. Some are falling off the map altogether. The mass migration to cities that took place after the Civil War in the 1930s decimated the populations of many rural areas. And things aren't getting better. Spain has one of the largest aging populations in Europe and one of the lowest birth rates. But to repopulate these rural areas, you need romance. Enter former insurance salesman Manuel Gonzalo. He runs a bus service with a big difference. Deutsche Welle's Danny Wood takes a ride now on the Love Bus.
I'm with a busload of about 50 middle-aged women who are heading 4 hours from Madrid in this bus to Piedra Buena, which means good rock, and they're quite literally hoping to find some good rocks there, some good men who will change their lives.
Many of the women aboard the coach are Latin American immigrants, like Delta, originally from Peru.
Well, we're on the bus to get to know new people, form friendships, to get to know the culture of different towns. And it's great because you really enter a new world and lots of different nationalities of people are involved. And, well, if you find someone who you share a nice feeling with, then you can start a relationship. And if that door opens well, great. And if not, you end up as friends, or at least you get to know a different way of life.
The Love Bus is organized by former insurance salesman Manuel Gonzalo, and it's not just about romance. The destination of his first coach over 10 years ago was his own village, Fuentesauco, near Segovia, which had a total population of 30 middle-aged single men and one widow. That first bus was so popular, he now runs nearly one a month.
I came up with this idea of a caravan of women with some friends to try and deal with the situation in my village in Segovia, and we've kept doing them ever since as a social battle to fight rural decline.
It's a hard battle. In some regions of Spain, the rural population has dropped by 70% during the last century, a result of young people moving to big cities to find work.
Now, I haven't actually taken the bus. I've got off that bus and driven for 3 hours because I want to talk to the men before the women arrive. So I'm just going to get out and get talking to those men and see how they're feeling about this caravan of women who are turning up.
¿Cómo te llamas?
Yo me llamo Jesús. Hay muchísimo. Mucha gente aquí soltera, mucha.
There are loads of single people in this town, and the girls are going to get jealous. In fact, they were trying to pretend that this bus wasn't coming. But for me, I'm easygoing, and I'm open to this caravan as a way of getting to know people and as a way of forming relations with women. I'm 42, and I've never had a wife or even a serious girlfriend. So for the 50 euros it cost me to meet the women, it could really be a day that totally changes my life.
So as you can hear, the bus has just arrived, and the women are stepping off. They're all being given roses or carnations, so a nice welcome. It's not quite shiny, happy people holding hands yet. The scene here is like an old-fashioned barbecue, perhaps in Australia, where the men stand on one side and the women on the other. I leave the party for a while and talk with some local people about this caravan of women. I find that most, like Claudia, are very positive about it.
I think it's a good idea. I think it's a good opportunity to bring a fresh air to the village, because this is very small, so I think it's nice.
It's the grand finale now. Would you believe it? These women arrived in this town at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's now 2 o'clock in the morning. Still going strong, and everyone seems to have mixed up a lot more. Everyone's dancing.
La Pamparera.
And here comes a favourite, La Pamparera. So Jesus, how's it gone? ¿Qué tal hoy? ¿Bien, al final?
Hoy he estado... La comida no está muy bien.
Well, the lunch wasn't very good, but we enjoyed the afternoon, and the dinner was nice. But I suppose this caravan of women wasn't quite what we were expecting. We were hoping that the women were going to be a bit younger, but it turned out very well. I exchanged a phone number with someone, and she is likely to visit me next week. And I really think that if the men here had more time, you would have seen more evidence of success. But the way things are, I'd say there will be a few serious couples forming after this visit.
Delta, the woman from Peru, appeared to be one half of a successful couple, so rather than interrupt her, I asked Maria from Colombia for her assessment of the caravan's visit.
Maravilloso, lo pasado de maravilla.
I had a wonderful time, a marvelous time, but here the men don't know how to dance. And there were actually too few men, so some women had to miss out. There were two men I liked, but they fancied other women. But no problem, that's the way it goes.
Another love bus returns to Madrid. These caravans of women are not able to solve rural decline by themselves, but there's little doubt that wherever they go, they're helping to restore life and vitality to Spain's country towns. Danny Wood from Piedra Buena in the region of La Mancha.
Carry me, caravan, take me away.
Okay, this might be a show with love as its central theme, but Network Europe is a news magazine programme, and harsh realities are its staple. Divorce is one such reality causing extra friction for international couples. The whole process of separating can be even more traumatic than usual for them, thanks to huge differences in divorce laws across the EU. If you marry somebody from another country and then settle in a third country, which set of laws do you follow? And how do you decide what's fair? Brussels is jumping in to simplify this legal tangle, but some countries are blocking the move, saying it's causing even more problems than it'll solve. Network Europe's Vanessa Mock is on the line now from Divorce HQ. Vanessa, why is Brussels getting involved here in the first place?
Well, to answer that, I'm going to have to throw a couple of statistics at you. You have 22 million marriages a year in the European Union, of which 350,000, so that's about 15%, are of an international character, meaning that they're of mixed couples. And in very, very many cases, you have those couples who are living actually outside their own countries. And that apparently is causing a dizzying amount of legal problems. There's nothing like a standard EU divorce law, so it depends very much on where you live. So if you're lucky, then you get a good deal and you live in Sweden, for instance, where you can get divorced in 3 days. And that's one side of the coin. And then at the other extreme, you've got countries like Malta, where actually you can't divorce at all. It's still illegal to get divorced in Malta.
So if you're Maltese, you have to leave Malta and try and get a divorce somewhere else, presumably.
Exactly. You're basically forced to become an expat just to try and get out of wedlock. And then, you know, lots of couples apparently have been complaining because they say, you know, why can't the law from my country of origin actually apply to me if I'm getting divorced? So now the Brussels is saying, well, listen, we need to be a lot more flexible. We need to give couples a choice of what law applies to them. And that's basically what they've been trying to do and failing to do for ages.
It sounds very complicated and great news for divorce lawyers who are just rubbing their hands with glee, counting all the cash, I imagine. When it's this complicated, it means more demand for lawyers.
It does, but the thing is, they're really not out of the woods with this proposal because you've got so many different ideas floating about. One idea, for instance, is that you could oblige a court in a country, say Germany, which has got very sort of tolerant, easy divorce laws, to impose, for instance, Irish divorce laws, which, as we all know, is a very Roman Catholic country, are very long and involved and complicated. Imagine then you have Irish law applied to a German court. Just have a quick think about the dizzying amount of legal bills, the translation bills that would involve. The whole court machinery would basically be turned upside down because of one couple.
Why doesn't the divorce law of the country in which you got married simply apply?
In some cases it does. It just depends on which EU country you live in. So because there's no normal standard EU law on this, in many cases that is the case, but in other cases that doesn't apply, which is exactly why Brussels is now saying, well, you know, we just need to have, you know, a standard set of guidelines here.
This may sound like me being typically cynical, Vanessa, but why is Europe tackling this whole thing? Could it be something to do with Eurocrats needing to get divorced?
Well, I think there's definitely a fair bit of self-interest here because you have apparently got a very, very high breakup rate among couples working in the EU in Brussels here. A lot of them mixed nationality couples. And that's raising lots and lots of problems. And presumably most of them are working at the Commission and actually busy drawing up these very proposals.
Doesn't sound too democratic, that, does it?
Doesn't sound too democratic, but it doesn't look either as if they're going to get anywhere with them. So maybe it's not even surprising that then you've got some countries like Germany, which are coming up with ideas such as, you know, getting international couples to sign a very romantic pre-wedding contract specifying where to get divorced if the whole thing breaks up spectacularly.
Wow, that puts a whole new dimension to the prenup agreement, doesn't it? Thanks a lot to Vanessa Mock in Brussels there. When you think of online dating services, you tend to think of non-religious people using them. After all, they don't have the community of the church to meet people in. But 2 years ago, three single Catholic students from Warsaw started Poland's first online Catholic dating service. Right now, the community is 27,000 strong and growing. So do Catholic singles in Poland need to go online to find a spouse? Polish Radio's Joanna Neifeld reports.
Only 22 months in operation and already 45 marriages, 81 engaged couples and 230 dating couples. Przeznaczeni.pl or MatchedInHeaven.pl, the largest and most successful Polish online Catholic dating service, is breaking records of popularity. Maciej Koper, one of the founders of the Zone for People with Values, as it is called, is stunned by the fruits that his initiative is bringing.
We have a great success. I mean, I never expect even 2 years ago that we have such a big success.
Solid foundations and a healthy conservative lifestyle seems to be what draws young people to the service.
Actually, I'm looking for true love, and I'm sure that true love is always connected with real values.
I'm here because I want to fall in love and find a good person who would spend me all my life.
So, how is it that there's a need for specifically a Catholic dating service in a country that is over 90% Catholic? Maciek Koper again.
When I registered in a normal dating service, I saw the things like my preferred sex position. So I thought, you can't find the right place for the people in Poland, even if it's a Catholic country, when you want to meet a right girl. I mean, it's pretty hard to pick up the girl in a church when she's praying, and it's a little bit hard to talk with a girl on a discotheque about rosary. That's why mainly we opened this service.
For sure, Catholics in Poland don't have to go online to find a spouse, but if they choose to, messinheaven.pl seems to be a good place to start.
Joanna Neufeld reporting for Network Europe there. So far, we've tackled romance, divorce and dating. Perhaps it's time to get physical. Whether you're greeting an old auntie or trying to make a pass at your aerobics instructor, the simple kiss is the most common of all the signs of affection. Kiss. But kissing can be a minefield of social gaffes, and getting it wrong in the Netherlands, where you're expected to give 3 cheek kisses to everyone you meet, is a quick way to look like an oddball if you muck up the etiquette. For Network Europe, Claire Kavanagh now explores the Dutch fascination with the kiss.
If you spend much time in the Netherlands, you'll soon realise that kissing isn't just reserved for your nearest and dearest. You can barely leave the house without some acquaintance puckering up in front of you and giving you 3 smackers. It's all very friendly, but it's important to read the signs, just so you know what you're getting into. I met Adine Russell, author of the book Body Language Never Lies, in a cafe in Amsterdam.
It's really simple. You just have to be aware of it. And that's it. People are not aware how much they say with their body.
Have you seen anyone come in this bar who's greeted each other with kisses?
I'm waiting for the girl next to me, because she's obviously waiting for somebody. Oh, we just have to sit and wait for kissing now. Because, you know, in Holland, like, the 3 kisses on the cheek, that's like a sort of a rule. You do that if you know each other. But the better you know each other, usually it just becomes 1 kiss. Just a warm kiss. Just because you like that, you know, to feel that person for a second.
So actually you get more for your money if you know somebody less here.
Actually, you do. I know a lot of people are uncomfortable with the free kissing. I don't know, it's just become a fashion.
Here's some people meet.
Yeah, there you go.
2 kisses.
2 kisses, oh, this is perfect. Ah, yeah, so that was...
She kissed the first man, she gave the first man 2 kisses on either cheek, and the second man she kissed on the lips.
Yeah, and she also, if you see, she also really hold his face and sort of pull them towards him, like, ooh, you're mine. And also, she made a distinction between the 2 kisses, you know, like, because she first she thought, oh, I'll just give a hand, and he pulled her towards her a bit, like, no. And the guy stood up and gave her the 2 kisses, and you could see she let him lead, like, oh, okay, you know, because it's obviously a friend of her boyfriend. It was quite intense how she held his face, like, ooh, oh, this was a very good. I think they saw us looking because they moved immediately to another table.
The terror of getting it wrong can turn what should be a pleasant experience into a social minefield. One of the most tricky times is when you move to a new country. You need to work out if they're 1, 2, 3, or even 4 people, or perhaps strictly hand only. I visited a dating night purely for research purposes run by Expatica, an organisation in the Netherlands which brings expats together.
Well, sometimes I even ask. It depends. If it's a really new person that I just met, I immediately ask because... Or if it's a person that I know it's Dutch, then I give 3.
The 3 kisses, I landed in Holland about 7 months back, and the first time I met one of my church friends, she said hello, so I said hello, And she came front to kiss me, so I thought she was asking my name. So I said, Rohan. And then she came front again. And I said, Rohan. I said, she couldn't hear. And then she came front again. And I was like, Rohan. And so now, to make fun of me, her name is Doreen. To make fun of me, every time I go to kiss her, she says, Rohan, Rohan, in my ear. That was really funny. I told my folks and friends in India about this. They found it extremely hilarious.
It's cold in Sweden at this time of year and at lots of other times too. And the Swedes have been practicing the warm embrace since Christmas. Not to keep warm though. No, the Swedish Red Cross has launched a hugging campaign aimed at helping the lonely. And as Radio Sweden's Jasna Karlin found out, once the Swedes got past the initial awkwardness, there was no holding them back.
It's a wonderful feeling, wanna hug. It helps with the healing, wanna hug. Because hugging feels like a natural thing.
A volunteering celebrity clad in a red cape, decorated with a badge and an obligatory collecting box giving away their mission, tries to attract a passers-by to part with at least 20 kroner in the exchange for a hug. We are at the main underground station in the heart of Stockholm. There are two huggers in action. Some of the organizers are standing about.
This is a Swedish Red Cross campaign. My name is Michael Coyett. I am the head of the Stockholm region. This campaign is in support of all the lonely people in Stockholm and actually in all of Sweden. The campaign is to get extra funding to increase our visibility and our ability to support the people.
So you actually have to pay somebody to hug me?
I will hug you for free, but other people have to pay. And the minimum fee is 20 kronor. If people feel generous and are happy with the hug, we hope they will pay a bit more.
Okay, people from more, let's say, physical countries like Italy would raise an eyebrow when such a campaign would be launched. It's kind of natural to hug. But here in Sweden, it's a sensation.
It is a bit of a sensation, and actually some of our older volunteers are not too happy to go out and hug. So we have attracted younger people. We see we get a new breed of volunteers, and we hope that we can keep them on as volunteers.
My name is Christina Lidén, and I work with the Red Cross in this campaign. I think it's very good to see that we can reach out to the people around us.
Do you find this totally serious campaign, or don't you think it's a bit ridiculous?
Maybe you can think so at first. You can think it's a little bit strange, but it's a good campaign, and just the thought is very warm and nice, and it shows that we need to open up a little bit to the people around us and just to see people in different eyes, I think. And by hugging them, it's a good way to open up and start communicating.
Would you like to have your opinion aired on the programme? We'd love to hear from you. And for details on how to get in touch, go to our website, networkeurope.org. That's where you'll also be able to access our archive, hear this programme, and find out more about all of us here on the programme. On Netweek's programme, we'll be back to our usual news format, giving you the inside track on everything you need to know from Europe. And we'll hear about the photographs that have changed the face of the world's media in the past 12 months at this year's World Photo Press Awards. Just a quick reminder of our quiz question for this month. Can you tell me which European monarch turned 70 on January the 31st of this year? From me, Richard Walker, and all of Network Europe's partners around the continent, thanks very much for listening.
Meaningless, you mean it's all been meaningless. Every whisper and caress. Yes, 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 it was totally meaningless. Meaningless, like when two fireflies fluoresce. Just like everything, I guess. Bless us, yes, it was utterly meaningless. Even less, a little glimpse of nothing. Yes, yes, it was thoroughly meaningless. And if some damn bulb should say we were in love in some way, kick all his teeth in for me. And if you feel like
It makes you blind, it does you in. It makes you think you're pretty tough. It makes you prone to crime and sin. It makes you say things off the cuff. It's very small and made of glass, and grossly over-advertised. It turns a genius to an ass, and makes a fool think he is wise. It could make you regret your birth, or turn cartwheels in your best suit. It costs a lot more than it's worth, and yet there is no substitute. They keep it on a higher shelf, the older and